Hey everybody, welcome to the Marquez Says Show. I'm your host, Marquez Mosier, and this is my co-host, cohort, and eldest son, Austin Jordan. He and I always seem to bring out the feisty side of each other, and it leads to some very spirited conversations. There's never really any one topic. We see the world from many different perspectives, and sometimes we agree, and sometimes we don't. Either way, it gets very interesting, so sit back, relax, and have a bit of fun at our expense as we explore some of the most unexpected perspectives you'll ever hear about the world we live in. So, let's get started.
Now, welcome to the Marquez Says Show. This is Marquez.
What's going on here?
Co-host, cohort, and
what?
Co-chair. Actually, there's a slight echo. That's why it's throwing me off a little bit. But
What did you do? You broke
but
it.
But I think I can make it work, so we're fine.
See, maybe if you listen to all my tech talk, you would learn something and would know how to fix the problem
About tech talk. And then technically, you'll find out, here's a pun, it's a TED Talk.
Did you just say technically? You like split it? This is a tech talk and technically.
Did I?
Were you like playing on words? It sounded like it.
I'm in that mood.
It was a play on words.
I'm in that mood because if you saw my post actually today, it was about ladder and how the former and the latter. And it's weird. So I was just feeling goofy. So
I don't get it. I need you to visualize it.
So today...
No, we're not moving on. Visualize the ladder.
We're moving on. We got to move. Just like technology, we got to move on.
I'm making you work for this connection.
So Austin got a feather in his bonnet. Mm-hmm. We'll keep this PG. And there's been a renewed interest.
What does that even mean?
With Ted Kaczynski and.
Kaczynski. There's no R.
Oh, yeah, because that's the actor, huh?
Kaczynski. Yeah.
So Ted Kaczynski, whatever. Otherwise known as Zinski. The Unabomber. And, okay, you know what? I'm going to switch this. I think this is going to be too confusing for me to do for. So let's. Oh, I can't. Okay, never mind. I will not be doing it.
You say it's too confusing, but I spent like the first year of my recording career at like 13 or 12 or whatever recording with a delay like that because I couldn't figure out. I had no idea how to fix it. It was like back like way before. So I'd have it going out of an output like milliseconds after the input was. And my God, it was like
torture. I don't know why it switched over, but it's odd because we're using the recording and I would have to stop the audio recording in order to fix it. So we'll be fine.
All right. We'll just stop the recording.
No,
we'll start over.
We're good. So go ahead, Austin. Lead us in. We've got technology and how it's going to ruin the world and how it's the worst thing possible. It's ruining humanity.
The delay is really messing with you, huh?
So go ahead.
Okay. Now, why don't I take over the talking for a bit? Okay. So obviously what Ted did is wrong, and you shouldn't target innocent people, and you shouldn't send bombs to, you know, these... To civilians, for lack of a better term, houses with the intent to kill them, which was his intent. His intent was to kill these people, and in his journals, you could see he was disappointed when his bombs didn't actually kill somebody. It was considered a failed experiment, which is also how he referred to these bombings, were experiments. And when it killed somebody, he would say it was a highly successful experiment. He was pleased with the results, such and such and such. He treated it like these experiments because that's what he's from. He's from the world of academia or academia.
Yeah, you're right.
Academia? Macadamia. Okay. But, yeah. And so he was a genius. I mean, he went to Harvard. Like, literally a genius. His IQ is
he's literally a genius.
Went to Harvard at 16, graduated, and then went to Ann Arbor and got his PhD in mathematics. Then taught at... University of California, Berkeley, as an assistant professor, and then dropped off the grid and went to outside of Lincoln, Montana. And the reason this is all so fascinating to me is I don't think he's wrong. I think his point in what he wrote, his manifesto, all of his words, I think were right. Now, his actions and how he tried to accomplish that was too far. Well, it was over the line. You don't accomplish these goals by killing
people.
That was
part of the thing, though, that he was talking about how the bombing was just to gain attention for his philosophy. Yeah. So it wasn't actually part of his philosophy. It was only to gather attention so that people would read his manifesto and
Well, that's true, but that's also something that he said later, and it kind of counteracts with what he had been saying for years and years and years and years about how he was angry and wanted revenge. Like, he had malicious intent. He wanted to kill these people. He wanted to... I think it became more of a broader point later. I think it started to click for him what he was doing. Like, he always had... And he talked about in this, like... I was watching, like, the Unabomber in his own words last night or whatever. And he was talking about how... he wasn't an activist, initially. That wasn't his goal. Like, it wasn't what he was thinking of when he, like... It was just something that he was inclined into. And he had, like, a foot in. And he, like, wanted these changes and stuff. But I don't think... I think for him to then say later, like, oh... and, you know, I only did these bombings to gain attention to this cause. I mean, I would like to believe it, but I don't... I think that was something that was came up with a little bit farther down
the
line.
And he also mentioned the part about having to... he was trying to bring about the revolution that he talked about. Because he felt that... If he brought about the revolution sooner and this brought down the system and the system collapsed, the heartache, for lack of a better term, the devastation, would be better to have that now than to let the process play out. And then, and of course,
yeah.
The inevitable, what he felt was the inevitable outcome of everything collapsing anyway. So he thought it was better to just do it now. And I think the bombing was part of that as well. He was trying to initiate that.
Yeah, very true. And then he also believed, though, that it would get to a point where it would be too late, that there would be no way to fix it. There would be no course correction. Or he didn't actually believe in course correction at any point. It was just always completely abandon the system because the system will overtake us. For those unfamiliar with the Unabomber, what his point was that technology... All the is taking away the freedom and the autonomy of what it means to be human, and that.
Yeah, you, here let me. I'm gonna. This is
stuff
this
that
is
we
literally
created.
The first thing from his manifesto. The industrial evolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. They have destabilized society, have made life unfulfilling, have subjected human beings to indignities, have led to widespread psychological suffering, and have inflicted severe damage on the natural world. That was what he led with.
Right. Yeah.
So it gives you a definite idea that, well, I don't... And you know, what's yeah. his basic premise is... Yeah. The multiple of them were the disconnect and the iron. I say irony of how technology is supposed to bring us together and technology is supposed to make life better, but ultimately it actually does exactly the opposite.
Yeah, when it reaches a certain point, one of the examples that I loved that he had is the car one. So it's like we built cars to make traveling easier. However, it ended up having the opposite effect, and then you needed a car to travel, whereas that went counter to what the idea was. And then the construction of, like, traffic systems, like trafficking. If you're going to get, say there's a four-way intersection, you're stopped at a red light, there's nobody else around, you're the only car on the road, but you're stopped at that red light, why are you stopped at that red light? it's a mechanism for control when there doesn't need to be any control. Because the argument is that, well, there's mechanisms of control to provide a safety for all of society. Okay, well, that's a pretty blanket statement. And in the hands of the wrong people, that becomes very 1984 very quickly. So the idea that being stopped at this red light when there's no other cars at that intersection becomes in and of itself kind of a dangerous idea.
You know, and it's true. But there's one thing that in that example kind of is glaring to me is that he is making a fundamental assumption that human nature is good and that people will do the right thing. And
I'm not so sure it's about doing the right thing or being good, but just being
right,
free.
But that's the point, though, is that if everybody's free, they're going to take that as a crutch or an excuse to act irresponsibly. That, and therein lies the problem, is because those people are going to make it worse for everyone else. We can't have one person running the red light, quote unquote, and everybody else not. And if you just say, okay, well, let's just have it, you know, basically a situational existence. Well, if the situation calls for it, you can go. If it doesn't, well, then it's subjective to each person.
Right. But then the counter argument to that would be the only reason that we can't necessarily hold society to a standard to where that everybody's going to be, quote unquote, good enough to have less restrictions is because they've been forced to be in these restrictions for so long. They've never had to learn it for themselves. They're just told. They're just drones.
Yeah. I mean, but that's...
So it starts at the root, and I think that was kind of part of his problem, too, was you can't course correct within the system. You have to get rid of the entire thing if you're ever
going
to make
that's the breakdown.
A real return
and
to
And I think
form
that's the breakdown because I don't... What I agree with you after reading some of his stuff, his points are valid. I mean, you could say what a lot of people said, was he a madman or a lucid genius? And I'd be like, well, he's probably closer to the lucid genius because what he wrote, if he had phrased them a little bit differently, used different examples and stuff, you could easily look at it and go, yeah, that makes total sense. And a lot of people do because you can look through it. If you look through some of the eccentrics of it, and exaggerations.
Well, let's say somebody didn't know who Ted Kaczynski was and you gave them that manifest, they'd probably be like,
yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, it also depends on how they lean in the beginning, like, too. Therein lies the rub is that I don't agree with the fact that there can't be a course correction. That's the part that I think I would just diverge with it because, sure, technology can separate us or bring us together. But I use the example of, like, the letter, when people talk about, sending a letter, and it used to take, you know, you write a letter, and it would be 3 to 5 days, and then you had to wait for an answer and all that stuff. And if you would ask those people back then, hey, what if that letter could be delivered almost instantaneously, and you could get a response the same day? They'd be like, that's great. Well, that's what we have.
Right. But just because it's something that they would have wanted doesn't necessarily mean that it's something we should have, just as the crux part of that, like what that point was. And then the other thing...
Well, how does progress...
That's true, but we've also become kind of enslaved to that. I mean, people get literal chemicals released.
Yeah,
like
dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin,
and like
endorphins.
When you get the message... Like, that's not healthy. That's why, like,
part of it,
people get mad at me if I take more than a few hours to respond to a text.
But see,
like,
therein lies, you know
what?
There
needs to be a line.
Austin, that's a personal, I think everything will always come back to personal responsibility. Because the argument that someone gets mad at you because you don't respond to them is their fault. It's because they're expecting something. Now, you can argue, hold on.
They're expecting something that
you
they
can
put
argue
on me.
That the technology is what's enabled that. You know, we expect it because we can. You can't, you know, we can get a response instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't, like you just said, that doesn't mean you have to respond instantaneously.
Yeah.
So technology is there, but it's how you use it.
Right. Okay, perfect. That leads into 2 points. One, the first one is, right, I said this on an episode before, is I don't think the argument, or at least my argument, is that technology enables this behavior. Technology facilitates this behavior. And when something becomes easier to do, more people are going to do it.
Yeah.
So that's my whole argument about the technology. And then make that the soundbite.
It's still
bite.
A
that's,
choice. Like, don't forget, fire. It's still a choice.
Okay. Yeah, I know. And then the other point, another thing that Ted had said too, was that technology in the hands, and this is a bitter-ish quote, is that technology in the hands of intelligent, competent people is good. But when it's mass-produced, mass-handled by unintelligent, incompetent people, that's when it's a problem. And part of his argument was that the majority, pretty much everybody, is using it in an unintelligent, incompetent way.
And you know what?
Which I think in today's society, we see more, even more than when he was talking about his stuff. We see that way more today than we do. Yeah. So he was
right. I was going to bring that up.
He was years.
Yeah, because he literally, this was all pre-internet that he was going through this. I mean, some of this was this was in the late 70s through the 80s and 90s that he was actually railing mm-hmm. against this. So what brings it into right now is the whole Apple Facebook privacy issues, where Apple's CEO, Tim Cook, just a shot at Zuckerberg, talking about how the companies shouldn't be built on data, data driven. And that's how you make, that's your business model. Mm-hmm. That's how you make money, et cetera, et cetera. And it very much like what you just talked about was the technology in the hands of what people, who are going to control it, who's going to control it. It's exactly what you just said, where if it's in the hands of certain people that handle it responsibly, I think that goes hand in hand and dovetails with the fact that you're going to have the people that allow it to be used well is going to create that facilitation and the choices for the person to use it or not use it, as opposed to the other one that may make it easy, but it's destructive because it's almost too easy, and it creates almost an addiction. In my mind, I use DOSE, D-O-S-E, for all of the elements that you talk about that you get, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins, and those are those chemicals you talked about that you get a release when you get a ding, when you get an alert, a notification. It's that same thing as a high. It's the same thing as gambling, et cetera, alcohol, and so on. And that is what they talked about. I was going to bring this up when you mentioned it, because Simon Sinek talks about how that's destructive, because we're basically handing over an addictive machine to our children and teaching them from age 3, 4, 5, hey, here you go. Let's get you addicted to these chemicals. You don't even know it, but hey, it'll be fine.
Yeah. And it makes it, and then it makes it significantly more difficult for those to come about in a natural setting outside of a screen, which then makes human interaction incredibly difficult. That's been my biggest one, is a lot of these kids, they're just not, I'm not sure they're learning the same sort of social skills or social abilities that the real world as it's structured today sort of requires. And then not only that, some of the discipline too, because like how we talked about earlier is like technology in most, I mean, the point is to make things easier. So when you're so used to everything happening with the touch of a button, and you have to go do it a different way, that's very problematic. And if you don't have the skills or the tools to be able to communicate that problem to somebody that can help you, then it becomes even more frustrating and more problematic. And now you're stuck against a wall. But that wall isn't even a stagnant wall. That wall is pushing back against you. And it's just pushing you even farther backwards. And that has always been one of my biggest things with the social media in particular, or just any sort of networking on the internet. It's just, to me, very destructive in the way that I see it used. It can be used well, but I would... No, I'm not even going to hesitate to say. I was going to say I hesitate to say, but I don't. I think most people use it in a way that harms them, and they might not even realize it.
No, that's a very valid point.
But I would say it's a very harmful tool.
And I got, we got lucky when we were raising you because it was just after when it's become so commonplace and easy to hand a tablet, a mobile device, or whatever in front of the five-year-old and then just let them play with that. You guys had, you were on the tail end of it, where when we would go on road trips, you weren't allowed to get on the watch a video until we hit the freeway. There was like, there was little buffers built in, and whether or not they really made a difference, I don't know. But it made us feel better because we would talk about like, no, you're not allowed to get, you know, we're going to the grocery store. No, you don't get a video for going to the grocery store. We're going to talk. We're going to interact. You're going to look around. You're going to be bored. I mean, don't you know how they used to do it? And all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't unless we got on the freeway and we were taking a long trip. You know, that was...
I think that actually did help because, funny enough, I'll tell you this. So, like, whenever I'm going on a road trip, like if I'm driving up to Sacramento or whatever, or when I went to Vegas that one time, I don't watch videos obviously because it's just me and I'm
Let's
driving.
Hope not.
But I'll have, but I'll have CDs that I've more or less picked out. That I said CDs. You heard that? That I have picked out more or less ready for the trip. And I structure it in a way is like, well, I don't want to do the best CD for the first hour or first 45 minutes. So let me put this one in the second spot. And, you know, this album's really cool too, but let's have that in the beginning. And then it has to be something that I'm cool sitting in traffic with, because the first hour of any trip outside of LA is traffic.
Yep. See, you can even go one step further to be like, you should just listen to the radio because that's the numb, just your brain dead.
Yeah,
you know?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do, but also it's harder for me to listen to the radio when I'm in traffic. If I'm not in traffic, the radio's not so bad. But if I'm in traffic and I'm sitting there like, what the move? And I hear fucking, like, I don't want to say any artist's name in case it ever becomes a problem. But and then I hear somebody come on the radio and I'm just like, what the? This is garbage. Get this off. And then, like, so it just makes things worse. So I like to control it to an element.
I don't think that's even in place now. I don't even think buffers or that thought process is even top of mind, which is scary because that's what we were talking about. That's what he was trying to say with that, the structure. Now it would be unheard of to get an SUV or a minivan or something family-oriented without having the DVD built in or missing, you know, whatever the case is. Of course you're going to have it in it. And it makes it so easy because now as soon as they shut the door, boom, video's on. It's going to keep the kids quiet. Mm-hmm. We don't have to hear them asking us, are we there yet? I got to go to the bathroom. You know, and the parents, sure, it enables them to be able to, you know, have a quote unquote better time, so to speak, I guess, without that. But what damage is it doing? And at this point, I think a kid that's coming up that's only 10 or 12, and by the time they get to be a parent, there's no way that they're going to think of life any other way. They're going to just, that's just going to be the way it is. It's going to, and if they got a rental car that didn't have it, oh my God, life is ending. I mean, you know.
It'll be considered like, low tier. Okay. And then this was another thing I wanted to talk about that you're helping transition into.
That's my job.
Is one day that's just going to be the norm.
That's my job.
You said what?
To segue it in. Just
there you go. That's usually my job, actually.
No, tangents. Tangents are your job.
Anyway, one day, though, that's going to be completely normalized. It probably already is today, to be honest. So then the argument becomes, well, this is the new way of human life. Is worrying about how it used to be even worth it? Or is it completely just futile? Does it have any point? And... to me, the answer is absolutely yes. Just because something has changed does not mean it changed for the better and does not necessarily mean you should accept it. We still have to be critical of certain things and analyze and admit when we make a mistake. We can't just make a collective decision as a society and decide that it's above thinking, oh, it's a mistake. Just because it was a collective, that doesn't make any sense. That logic doesn't track. So we have to be able to acknowledge that there's a mistake on a grand scale as well.
If I remember correctly, part of his was critical thinking. I thought that part of it was that element being taken out. I'm not sure if that was him or not when I was reading it. Yeah, I mean, it was. I thought I heard, mm-hmm. or I thought when I was reading it, that was a portion of it. Because it's interesting. One thing that really was interesting that as I read through it was his attitude toward extremes and especially leftists.
Hey everybody, Marquez Mosier here. You've heard me reference my coaching programs in the podcast, and I just wanted to tell you a bit more. My coaching revolves around the principles of the Think More, Care More, Live More philosophy, and I help instill a mindset of awareness, kindness, and action so that you can improve your current situation and lay the groundwork for a better future. For more information, check out our website at visionperspective.com and schedule a complimentary discovery call today. Thanks, and we'll talk with you soon.
The left-leaning mm-hmm. aspect of his philosophy, where it's on paper so good. I mean, people doing good for others and trying to help them, but in and of itself, it was exactly the opposite because it was... not enabling. It's kind of ironic. I think it's kind of somewhat of the conservatives' argument against a lot of left policies about how if you create the government or the system is taking care of you, you know, you try to create technology that's going to make life easier and better for everyone. Is it better or is it easier? Because there's a big difference between those two. And if it's making it easier, then you're actually taking away their ability to do things on their own, and then that actually hurts them. So you got to be careful.
And I agree. Right. Well, and I don't exactly, but I think, and that's one of the bigger problems that I've had with today's Democrat Party is because of things like that. I am generally a left-leaning person. For the most part. However, I am not a Democrat. I just don't like our Democrat Party as a whole. I just don't. I don't like what they talk about. I don't generally like the way that they communicate their ideas. It feels very misleading and it feels very smoke screens. And if we had more time, I could Google stuff. Well, I can give examples. Well, we can go through links.
Let me interject something real quick here. Because obviously I've been around longer than you have, I find it fascinating mm-hmm. that as we look at the Democratic Party now and what they stood for decades ago, one decade, two decades, three decades, it's not the same. And that's part of what a lot of Democrats say, like you are saying. They're saying it for different reasons or mm-hmm. they're actually saying the same thing, but they're coming from it from a different perspective because they remember a time when it wasn't like that. And it's true also for the Republicans as well, but not mm-hmm. as much. Their differences are much, much less, they're much less glaring, so to speak.
Well, definitely. My biggest problem with both parties is that it's all just pageantry. It's all, we're just going to say this to try to appease as many people as we can because we want to win. And that's horrible, no matter who it's coming from. The reason that I take such issue with it when it's the Democratic side is because they're the party that's supposed to be like we're the good guys. We're the good guy party and all that stuff. And I hate it when they try to put themselves like that because... Well, one, it's just condescending.
Well, that's
like, they know that's it's condescending.
Part of it. That was exactly what he was saying. Was that in that rush to try to be good and to try to help people, you're inherently saying that I'm better than you. And I think I hear this argument a lot with the civil rights and the Black Lives Matter now and stuff like that, where mm-hmm. you need to show an authenticity, as much as that word is overused. You need to be genuine in the fact that I'm trying to help a community or I'm trying to help a group, and I'm doing it whether it's going to be a detriment to myself or not. And that's the true line of whether or not you're really doing it or not. Because a lot of people do it because they want it makes them feel good, or they think that it's what they're supposed to do. But they're not even realizing that in doing that, they're being condescending. They're looking down on those people. They're not doing it consciously. They're not doing it on purpose. But it's if you're saying, here, I'm the one that can take care of you, and talking about Unabomber's Ted's philosophy, that's the system. That's that system that he was railing against, because if you create that system and you get people dependent upon it, you're going to lose your individuality. You're going to lose your freedom. And it doesn't end up helping anybody. But the ones who are who are for it the most are actually going to make it the worst. They're building the system at a much exponential rate if they have their way, which in his view is going to lead to an inevitable collapse, which is going to be bad for all of us. So in his argument is stop those people from doing it, because that will slow down the system building.
Yeah. And I think that, that was exactly it. Like, his targets, they were ideas. And then if you notice too, they become less personal if you track it. The reasoning is the Unabomber is University, and then, or the UN is university, the is airline.
What's the bomber?
right? And then later, I mean, a little bit after the initial ones of the universities was very personal because he was treated extremely horrible at Harvard. And so it was very personal and a rage there. And then airlines, and then later on it became some tech people and stuff like that. So to confirm what you were saying, the point before that. I feel like I was transitioning it into another point, but I don't remember what it was anymore.
Was it the system building? Was it the...
Oh, the collapse. I think one of his even bigger fears than the collapse of a system was that we were going to go so far down this road, was that it wouldn't collapse. We would just be completely subservient to technology. Mm. That it would basically become the new dominant factor. Humans would no longer, it wouldn't even matter to be human because we're controlled by everything. And at that point, it would be like we're a pet to something that doesn't even live.
You said it out loud, doesn't that sound like religion? That doesn't really matter what you do.
In what way?
Because God has a plan for you. There's destiny.
And that's always been my biggest problem with it.
It's funny about, here we go. Okay, he's railing against the system about technology and such, and yet you can loop it right back to hundreds of thousands of years ago, where it's the same concept of religion. Religion does the same thing. It reduces people to, depending on which religion, of course, but most of them are reduced to a higher power that controls everything, knows everything. Your fate is, if it's your time, it's your time. You know, all of this. So what is, and they struggled with, well, how do you have freedom? How do you have individual freedom, free choice, if what I do doesn't make a difference? And they've, come up with many different ways of getting, well, we absolve you from your sins, repent, blah, 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 blah. But the constructs are almost, I won't say identical, but the constructs are very similar.
Right. Well, it's because when you let anything lord over you, I think that the big point in that illustrates it is that's not a good thing. There's no good outcome from that. Is you have to remain autonomous and keep your core principles of freedom. And I think that's the whole point. And the argument is that, well, you're not necessarily happy if you're free. But I think that you can only know true happiness if you're free, or at least free to some extent.
I think Well, happiness is a state that you choose or not choose. So even if you are not free, and it depends on what kind of, are you talking about, you know, what kind of freedom, physical freedoms, emotional freedoms and such, you can still be happy mm-hmm. and not free. But it may mm-hmm. be more difficult to get there, to be happy. Whereas right. with the element of freedom, I believe that there's less constraints. And if there's less constraints, mm-hmm. then it is easier to do. But see, I think that's part of the rub right there, is that when we talk about happy, is happy meaning getting what we want? Because that loops right back into, well, if we want something, then we would want it to be easier to get that thing. And how do we make it easier mm-hmm. generally is to use technology in order to, so.
But think about it. We usually want things that are unhealthy for us.
I don't.
The things that we want the most are unhealthy.
I don't
think
it's the most. I think.
What's the most addictive thing on the planet?
Ice cream.
Close. Sugar.
But that's also sugar. Something that you don't. I guess when you say that sugar doesn't necessarily make you happy, I mean, it can, of course. Sugar can make you happy.
But no, but it's something that we all want.
Doesn't just.
Every human right, wants sugar. It's an addictive compound.
But it doesn't make someone happy.
No. I know, but that my point wasn't about the happiness. My point is if we chase the things that we want, that's dangerous. We want to have ice cream 24/7.
Okay, I'm not following you, because the point was being happy. Was like, in order to be happy, it's...
I know, but then you started talking about wants, and then following that want, how do we make getting that want easier? And then technology...
That's because I was equating the fact that people will think that what we want, because it makes us feel good, is making us feel happy. So in order to be mm-hmm. happy, you want more and more of those things that we want. But there is a line. To be mm-hmm. happy, you don't. It's that doesn't mean you're getting everything you want. That I mean, I think we all know that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can be
true. I was just wanting to make that so clarification, just to make sure
you can be happy without getting everything you want. In which case, But that's the problem. Is most people will mm-hmm. equate. Well, I'm going to be happy when I get everything I want. Well, then I need to make it easier to get everything I want. And to make things easier, mm-hmm. I'm going to use technology. And that brings it into what he was talking about, but it's going to actually do the opposite. You're going to become unhappy mm-hmm. because the technology and the system is going to take over. You know, I use this art, this illustration all the time about, I hear people, generally older people, talk about how, oh, everybody's got their nose in their phones, you know, and you know, if you're on the subway or you just can't go anything. And I remember back seeing all of the pictures of people reading the newspaper. It was mm-hmm. the same thing. They tried to make it sound like we were always talking to each other. There was always so much more conversation in like public transit and stuff like that. No, there wasn't. People had their nose in the newspaper. Well, now, did they talk more? Sure, I'm sure they did. I mean, there's an element of it. But it wasn't the default. It wasn't like you sat down and you had the people around you and you just started, hey, how's your day going? And I mean, oh, I like your shoes. And, no, if you had the newspaper, the newspaper definitely went up. You read the newspaper.
But I don't think that when old people say that, they necessarily mean that everybody was talking. Maybe they do. If they do, I think that's definitely wrong. But the quality of information, if somebody's reading the newspaper versus scrolling through Snapchat BuzzFeed articles, there's going to be a pretty large difference in quality of the information
that wasn't what they're
you're ingesting.
About. No, they're talking about the fact that they're ignoring other people, the contact, the communication. And by the way, what was the most favorite part of the newspapers that most people read? Yeah.
Comic strip.
So... how are you going to tell me that, you know, it's that when most people were looking for the comic or the sports section and...
Yeah, but that only lasts so long. There's an endless amount of, you know, just random nothing articles that you can read scrolling through Instagram or Snapchat.
But again, or, technology makes it easier to read the things that you want.
Or TikTok.
I get you. But
and then TikTok. Wait, hold up. I need to talk about TikTok. Okay. So it relates by us willing to give away our human right freedoms. TikTok, something that came out, we knew was reporting personal data to China, the Chinese-based company. We knew for a fact. It had been disclosed. It wasn't even trying to be hidden. It was disclosed, yet the mass majority, millions and millions of people said, well, I'm getting an enjoyment out of it. I don't care. Who cares?
That blew my mind. Right, and you're wrong, like, at the same time. I'm not totally sure about the fact that we knew for a fact. I know that there was always that aspect that out there.
No, it was in the details, the user details, okay, and stuff. It wasn't
but
trying
the
to
people,
be hidden.
You're assuming that they knew that. All those millions of people.
Most people
they
at that point did.
That's the
come on. It was everywhere in the news that it was
Austin,
a big deal.
Austin, hold
the
on.
The president
on. Here's
literally almost banned it.
Your prototypical TikToker, especially early on, do you think they were paying attention to the news?
No, but it's not necessarily early on. TikTok had been around for a long time before it became
a big
deal.
Most of the people that are like hardcore TikTokers, because they want just they're literally there to get the likes, et cetera. They're not trying to push a message. They're just trying to those people.
Well, I'm talking about people consuming it too, though, like watching content, signing up for an account just to browse.
Well, they're giving some of their information, but they're not actually as much as the people that are doing on it.
Well, they're giving as much information.
They're not aware. And they're not choosing to be not aware. They don't even if you told them that. Now, granted, even if you told them,
I know
they're still probably going to do it because I understand your point.
Yeah. I know people personally. I know that's just anecdotal evidence. However, I do know people personally that knew and like,
oh, absolutely. It's
like, it doesn't matter. Again, if you were to go into a comment section or whatever on any article or whatever, or if you see go on to social media or whatever, it's like there were memes about it. There were memes like cartoons and stuff of, oh, this, we're giving all our information to Daddy
China
or whatever. Keep scrolling.
Here's a good one that you talk about where it said, one of the ones where it says, hey, I never do these, but I'm going to try it. What is your favorite color? I'm not giving you the secret password to my bank account. What is your mother's maiden name? You know, all those ones where it talks about what's your favorite number? Hey, what street did you grow up? You know, all those ones that were fishers. They were basically phishing campaigns for people.
Yeah, they're typical questions for security questions.
And it's the same thing. And people were like, oh, this is so much fun. Oh, this is so much fun. Oh, I didn't know your favorite color was red. Oh, you grew up in, you know, so-and-so. I didn't know that. You know, it was all, you know, people didn't realize.
Right.
There's the other people were looking at it going, okay, that was secret question number one, answer to secret question number two. They didn't care. And you're right. And they still do it. People still do that. And it comes back to the technology being a prisoner to the system. Because, like we were talking about with his philosophy, what was it literally called? The specific name of it was Industrial Society and Its Future.
Hey everybody, Marquez Mosier here. Do you find yourself more and more distracted? Is it difficult to focus? Are you having difficulties overcoming the challenges of life and achieving your personal or professional goals? It's tough, I know. There's distractions coming at you from every direction. That's why I created the Finding Focus Workshop. It's a free introductory workshop for those with leader, teacher, or parental type roles or responsibilities, and specifically designed to help you improve your current situation and lay the groundwork for a better future. Why wait any longer? Take advantage of this free workshop and sign up today. Visit visionperspective.com for more information.
And he was predicting, I think, the worst case scenario. And when they went to trial and they were going to try to say that he was insane, he wasn't. I think it's pretty clear that
he couldn't have that. Well, yeah, he couldn't because he can't be portrayed as some madman insanity. It destroys his whole...
Right, and that was part of his argument.
The whole
but
mission.
It was almost kind of obvious that he wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't all there, but
no,
he certainly
wasn't
insane. At least certainly not criminally insane.
Well, there was a lot of governmental push for him to be considered insane because, let's face it, I mean, a lot of those people...
they have a lot to lose.
They don't want, yeah, they do not want somebody to think like, oh, Ted Kaczynski was onto something. When he was, and like, he is today. And
it's interesting. It's more relevant now. If he, like you said at the beginning, if you had given this to somebody right now in college, or in high school even, and they read it, they would immediately see parallels to today's society, which he didn't even foresee. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the literal sense.
Well, exactly.
He foresaw the technology and the system coming.
He just didn't know what would facilitate it, like cell phones.
Yeah, but he didn't think about Facebook all the social media and internet and stuff like that.
Having a lot of technology,
and they would read it and go, okay, it's a little extreme, but it certainly makes some very valid points. And that's therein lies the truth of it, that we are living it to some extent. The question is how do we get out of it? His choice was to bring about the collapse. You know, he was short circuit, basically. He wanted to short circuit it. And I can't get behind that.
I don't think that it's extreme. I think that whether we can attribute it to technology in the end or not, human civilization will fall. It will end. It's just inevitable. Will it likely be because we created technology that ended up just completely overpowering us? Maybe not necessarily in a physical domination sort of way, but in a way that leads to our own downfall? Probably. I think that probably is what's going to end up happening. In some way, we'll either make the planet inhospitable. I think that, all the data and the science says that's what's going to happen. And
the ultimate irony could be that technology ends up saving us.
But it takes intelligent people
such
to
as
do
Elon
that.
Musk. Would he be classified as that?
You know, a lot of people say that he's an evil,
I know,
evil man.
I agree, but so that's, but it's.
I don't necessarily.
But it is like that.
Believe that
it is,
but
those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Because with this rollout for these. Although we should wrap this up, but like one thing about technology being used in a good way was somebody, you know, for a rollout of a vaccine that we need to get to everybody, as many people as quickly, who do we know that has mastered the ability to mass distribute to individuals and individual households?
U.S.
We have UPS,
service?
USPS, Amazon. We have all these people, and they have the workforce with the National Guard and military. We should not be having a problem rolling out the vaccine. We have the knowledge to do it. In fact, on a small scale, a small town, I read an article about a small town was distributing it, and something went down in the system, and it caused like our backups for a drive-through vaccinations. The mayor swallowed his pride and called the local Chick-fil-A manager and said, we have these lines. We know you guys know how to take care of this and do this. Can you help us? And he did. He was like, he left and he checked out the system. It took him about an hour and he figured out, he pinpointed what the bottleneck was, and they got it down to 15-minute waits. I mean, that's
cool.
That's exactly how it can be used, like you said, in the hands of someone who's meaning well.
Capable. And competent. We could talk about California. I know you're trying to wrap it up, but we could talk about California. What is the biggest argument against our governor right now? That he's incompetent. That he is not handling what is being given to him. Whether that's a fair accusation or not, that's ultimately what it's boiling down to.
I think we got her.
And also,
I think
another
we got
thing,
a subject for our next one.
Go ahead.
Well-meaning and competency.
Because this is the thing I've always said: is are good intentions valuable? Yes. However, when you're somebody in a position of power, no, your good intentions ultimately mean shit at the end of the day if you can't accomplish anything worthwhile. So, because it depends on the responsibility of what you're trying to accomplish. If you're just having a conversation with a friend and you have a good intention and it comes out wrong, no, that is not some big deal. The good intention does count in that situation. If you're trying to solve some civil unrest, oh, well, I got good intentions, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't, like, at the end of the day. And I think that there are some people that would be like, well, yeah, it does. Well, no, it doesn't. And stop giving an excuse, because people hide behind something. That.
The intentions, the well intentions, need to be there, because if they're not good intentions, then they're probably bad intentions. But I understand your point that in and of itself, it's useless. You can't just have good intentions. You have to have some action behind it. You have to have some implementation and so on.
And it certainly can't be an excuse. Right. And it's very frustrating for me when I see people defend somebody they don't even know and be like, well, this person, made this decision was bad. I didn't like this decision, but they had good intentions.
I think what you're trying to say.
It's like, dude, this literally hurt you. But you're shilling out for this person because you think you're supposed to.
You can't, like, you can't hide incompetency behind good intentions. That's just...
No, you... Yeah, and I don't think you should.
I agree. That's the accountability and responsibility aspect of things, so... Good.
Mm-hmm. Mm. One more thing before we wrap up. Because I think that we ended it kind of with the Ted stuff on a dour note. You think that we cannot... just short-circuit the system and it can't blow up. I agree with that. So realistically then, the only way out is to educate everybody in a much more effective way about technology and how to use it responsibly. The pitfalls of using Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all this stuff in the way that it's being consumed now. But in an honest way, but there's way too much money behind these sorts of programs.
And I do think that's where it can get shortcutted. That it's always been true with anything that's destructive, whether it's firearms, whether it's drugs, alcohol, all those things need to be taught in a pro-con type of way.
If you ask the leftists, you take away all the guns.
Well, far left, yeah.
Right, but I mean,
yeah. So I mean, there's also this that's why the far of anything is usually not the best solution. You need to be able to find.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure making all guns illegal is super far left anymore. I would say it's a little bit more mainstream.
No, because there's tons of people. That's why it's such an argument. If it was a little more accepted, you wouldn't have so much pushback. So, but anyway, that's another for another. That's another good one for subject. Yeah, well, anyway, hopefully you guys got something out of that, because it's definitely, and I think Austin, that was perfect to leave it with, that like anything else, technology is something that we have to be aware of, because it's just a tool, and how we use it is going to determine whether it ultimately is bad or good. So think more, care more, live more, and remember, you can change your life. We can change the world one decision at a time. Anything else, Austin? For all of you who are listening, he was waving goodbye. So, bye-bye.